Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. On X, Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how are you?
Well, I got two things. One is I'm hot. Normally when I talk to you, I try to get steps, but I'm outside walking around the pool, right? That's all I do. I just walk laps around the pool. It's so damn hot out there today that now I'm just walking around my den. I'm just like walking around the couch in circles around my den because out there I'd melt. So that's the first point. The second thing is, I don't know if you heard Justin Fuente on today, but he was just great on the Jason and John. And I wondered what your experience was because he was talking about the uprising when a group of players went in to demand that they start Jacob Karam over Paxton Lynch. And he was just great on this topic. I don't know if you heard it. He said, well, first I knew they were out there. And so I made him wait for half an hour to an hour.
Right.
And then he said, and then I went and I looked at how they graded out in each of the last, in the last game. And, you know, whatever. He didn't say their names. But he said, he walked in and he said, so you think it was Paxton's fault as opposed to the right guard who blew the block on the third play and resulted in the play again, or whatever, or the middle linebacker who missed three tackles. He was just tremendous. It was the kind of story that you don't hear, you know, or you only hear it years later because now it's safe to tell. But God, I wish people would be. I mean, I know Ryan can't say that kind of thing now about things that are happening now, but you would. It is nice to just hear the real truth, you know, at least as seen through their eyes. It was hilarious.
I think once they ran out of words, too, he gave them a get the hell out of my office. And what's funny about that whole thing, Jeff, is obviously I was on that team. I was redshirting.
Yeah.
But that was the so-called leadership council, like that he had appointed that walked into his office to request that. And you would think, like, just – if you're appointing all these leaders on your team, I know it was a 3-9 team, so it was a crappy team, but you're appointing all these leaders, you would think, okay, he's going to be receptive. He was so, I mean, he completely shook them off. There was no, he did not receive their message at all, which I find hilarious.
And he was, and in the end, he was proven to be right. Like, not necessarily that year, but over the long haul, like he invested in Paxton and Paxton, you know, was tremendous. Did you, by the way, know or have an opinion? I mean, obviously, at that point, you weren't supposed to have an opinion or certainly to express it. Did you have an opinion on who should be starting?
I mean, the way I saw it was, okay, if Jacob starts, maybe you win one more game and you're 4-8. I didn't really have – I think most people that were redshirting that year and still had high hopes for what the program could be, and obviously we delivered. We delivered, so there's that. But
– yeah.
In the end of the day, I don't think any of us had like some strong opinion because all the guys that were there and that requested that Paxton be sat for Jacob Karam had been there with Jacob Karam for a couple of years.
Right.
And they had a certain type of respect built up for him.
100%.
And I always thought it was kind of stupid, Jeff, if I'm being completely real with you, even at 18 years old in my freshman year, I thought it was really dumb that they did that. Because Jacob was not some savior that was going to get you to a bowl game.
Right. He was not some – yeah, right. And, and obviously he
– you didn't have Tom Brady sitting behind Paxton Lynch that year.
Right. Anyway, it was just a – it was the kind of story that you like to hear, you know, that you'd – because we obviously didn't hear that story when it was happening. We knew of the schism and wrote about the schism, and I happily – while others were leading the charge to free the piano man, I happily said Paxton should be playing. So occasionally you get one right. But anyway, that was entertaining.
Yeah, but did you ever have a column about Paxton's struggles, though, too? I think he did at one point.
Maybe, but I don't think I ever said he should be benched or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I forgot who it was, offensive coordinator. I got a lot of grief because during that spring game before that year, someone said, hey, he reminds me of Tom Brady in a certain way, right? And I didn't say he is the next Tom Brady, but I did quote, okay, you know, the whatever. And then when he was struggling, I was just getting ripped as, oh, God.
Yeah, I need to know who said that. You said it was OC. It would have been Daryl Dickey or somebody, like, or Brad Cornelison at that point. But listen.
He compared Paxton, some element to him.
Paxton was so good at what he did. I will say this confidently, and I don't think he'd be offended by this if he heard me say it. Still friends to this day, but there is no part of Paxton Lynch that ever reminded me of Tom Brady.
Right, right. Well, they're big dudes. They're big dudes, big lanky dudes like Tom Brady. How about that? How about the big? I don't remember the element that was Brady.
In the early 2000s and the 90s, that's all we drafted. You know what I mean? Right. Like everybody was 6'5 plus or 6'4 plus. So do they all remind us of Tom Brady at that point?
I don't actually remember being ever particularly critical of Paxton. But anyway, it was an entertaining. That was one of those moments in the radio. Yeah. I was parked at Office Depot. And I had to go in to buy legal pads because I'm old school and I have legal pads. And I sat in my car to listen to the end of the interview. You know, radio's, you know, working when you sit in your car to listen to the end of the interview. And what a nice life for Justin that he has made enough money that he can just basically do this part-time gig and hang out with his family.
Yeah.
What a great deal.
And I didn't get to listen to the interview today, but I did an interview with Coach Fu last year on my podcast over at Bluff City Media. And I asked him, me and my co-host asked him about, you know, would you ever give a thought getting back into head coaching? And he didn't say it this way, but it basically came across as an absolutely the hell not. And he can't imagine doing like money negotiations behind the scene, because the truth of the matter is I can sort of back that up. When he came in at the University of Memphis, obviously there wasn't a whole bunch of under the table money that he could offer us.
Right.
But it was, I mean, the way that we won was all walk-ons and 2-star recruits getting developed. That's how he did it. So like that was never his style. Even when he got to Virginia Tech, their recruiting fell off because I don't think he was willing to play that type of game.
I think that's right. And I think it's funny. You look at, because I really do think if I thought of a coach and a fit, you know, Fuente at Virginia Tech seemed foolproof. You know, he had that slightly, you know, didn't need the bright lights, would be worked perfectly at Blacksburg, old school, sort of like a Frank Beamer type. You could imagine him being wildly successful there. Honestly, not unlike I would have thought the fit for Mike Norvell in Florida State would have been perfect. And both of them have struggled.
Well, the Norvell's, that is about as up and down as you can get, right? Norvell.
Yeah.
We'll see what he does this year. This is the get something done or get fired.
Yes, this is the get something done year. But I think to your point, I think in the end, the part that I was too optimistic about was in the end the recruiting, right? I mean, although Justin had to manage that transition from Beamer, who is he keeping, who is he not keeping, kept certain people on the staff, tried to be deferential. And so I think, I imagine, and I think you might have talked about this on your podcast with him, that those are things he might, if he had to do that over, he might do that.
Yeah, there was always a power struggle with the defensive coordinator, I believe. I forget his name at this particular moment, but he was there with Beamer the entire time. But a lot of Virginia Tech fans wanted him to be the next head coach. I think there was a bit of a power dynamic that was hard to get over there because of the holdovers.
But anyway, I was a big Justin fan because he didn't really love the media part of it necessarily. But when he talked to you.
But he did it.
He did it, and B, he told you the truth. You know, like it. What felt like as much of the truth as he could tell, He wasn't, you know, and so, you know, I mean, he would say about Paxton, you know, he, I wish he would study more, you know, like yeah. he could kind of hit the books a little hard. Like he would, he was, and it was good to hear him on the radio today. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm sure that he was able to talk about the Big 12 offer that was made yesterday.
He did.
But $200 million, no money taken in. And then they would potentially, you know, leave it open for the Big 12 to kick them out in 2031. And it was still a no. I heard and saw John Martin say this, but he said Memphis has done everything it can do. Once upon a time, it was a football program. That's been addressed. Then it was about academics. That's been addressed. The stadium addressed. He says the goalposts just never stopped moving, and I agree with him. The only thing I'd add to that quote there is now we're at a point with this particular no where I don't even know if there's goalposts anymore. I think the goalposts are gone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone has ever said, in fairness to the rest of the world, if you do X, you're in. If right. you do X, you're in.
Sure.
That's the implication of goalposts. If you do X, X,
but
X,
there's
y,
an assumption
and Z,
there.
You're in. And never has said, you've just tried to The problem, I mean, first of all, it's harder to get in now. You know, it's like the metaphor of the last chopper out of Saigon, right? Like when there's, if you're getting one of the first choppers out of Saigon, when people have, you know, if like Louisville did, it was easier to get in the chopper. It just was. It was easier to get in the chopper. And Memphis wasn't particularly focused on it at that point, which is too bad. Now, you know, there's really no evidence there's a chopper leaving. You know, like Memphis tried to conjure one up. So it actually gets to be harder, it seems to me, to accomplish this. And then, listen, I have my own, you know, theories about it. And I wrote a whole column about how I thought this whole thing was at some point tinged with racism or the demographics work against Memphis in a way that people should actually applaud the diversity represented by the University of Memphis campus, but instead at some liminal way, I think it's held against Memphis. And I think that is true to some extent, but if the truth of the matter is it could be as simple as this. You're not a big market and you're not a rich market. And so TV has never been fawning over you. And so that goalpost has been a goalpost that has been there all along and has not moved. Like I wrote a whole column today about how, If you know, there was that quote about how we looked at Memphis before and what's changed. I wrote a whole column about all the things that have changed. Lots has changed. The football stadium's changed. They put this $200 million now into the football stadium. It's now a tier one university, according to the Carnegie ranking of research universities. They just were top 25 in football and basketball, one of seven schools. Like you can rattle off all the ways and things that have changed, and they're impressive. The thing that hasn't changed is Memphis is a small, poor TV market. And that is still true. And so, and I think that is, I mean, I think honestly that ESPN is a big part of this. My suspicion is, we'll never know this for sure, or maybe we will, but my suspicion is, I don't think they even push this, the University of Memphis, Bill Hardgrave and Ed Scott, if they don't think they have the votes. Like, why would you do that? It's like you don't make this big proposal in a formal fashion unless you're pretty convinced you have the votes. I think they thought they had a pretty good chance of getting the votes, but I think in the end, the TV dynamics work against them.
Yeah. That's tough. And I guess I get what you're saying, although they brought in Cincinnati, which is what, 37th in TV market. That's not some unbelievable TV market. You know, Provo, BYU, I know they have like a wider ranging sort of fan base, but that's not some unbelievable TV market. I like the Orlando and the Houston edition with the TV market. That makes sense. It's like 15th and top 10 with Houston. But then again, we've had this conversation before about Houston where they don't own that market by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
They're tertiary.
I pretty clearly think that everyone has always missed outside of Memphis the grip that really what Memphis could become. And the fact that they are able to put together this kind of offer is more evidence of it.
Right,
I think if Memphis got in, the fact that they have the passion in this community for the University of Memphis is something that is wildly overlooked and underappreciated by all these anonymous people who are voting against Memphis. So I think it's a mistake not to have let them in. I think Memphis is not a sleeping giant, but Memphis has real potential that is unappreciated, untapped. I believe that to my core. I also think, though, that in the end, if you're looking at what's the one thing, the truth of the matter is it's a scale. Right? Like, talk about crime. Well, Houston has crime. Houston has plenty of crime. But they're a massive city. And so that helps Houston, right? You look at Cincinnati. Cincinnati's not the biggest TV market. But at the time that they were admitted, they were just kicking butt in football, right? They were one of the best five teams in the land in football. So I really think that UCF, okay, well, they don't have some great rich tradition of whatever, but my God, they're in Florida, and this is a huge growing university, and we can see the potential for growth.
They kicked ass in football, too. They claimed a national championship.
And they kicked ass in football, too. So I do think it's a scale, and the problem is Memphis starts out with smaller, poorer market, and then you put on there the reputation of the city and the reputation of the university, even though certainly with the perspective of the university, a lot has been done to change that. And, we are where we are. I don't think, though, like the problem with John's quote is not the problem, but it suggests a finality. Like, it's over. And I don't believe that. Like, and Justin Fuente was talking about it. He pointed out SMU was rejected many times before they were accepted. Like, you have no choice but to keep trying. And now it is very clear. I think people out in the universe are very aware of Memphis's ambitions. And so, you know, they very clearly are the most attractive and most ambitious school out there. And so I don't think that it's a blow yesterday. I mean, there's no question it's a blow that people felt yesterday, but I don't think it means, and this is the final blow and we should now give up the quest. And I don't think they think that.
Right. There's a lot of positives to the story yesterday. Once you sort through the Big 12 wasn't interested. I think my first reaction when I saw the news drop, though, Jeff, and I would venture to say you probably had the same reaction, is they can offer $200 million. Like, that was my first reaction. Yeah. How the hell, where did that come from? How did that happen? That was my first reaction to the whole thing, and I think that's an overwhelming positive. Now, you talk about this not being like a final, chapter to Memphis's quest when it comes to getting into a power conference. What is next, though? Like, I it's hard to predict, I guess, but if you're speculating, like, what do you think that Memphis pivots to now? Or do they just wait until the Big 12 gets a little bit more interested?
I think you probably just continue to wait. I mean, you know, I still think what does the Big East and the PAC and football only. I mean, that has some appeal, right? It's not ideal, though. And I think it's pretty clear that we now know that wasn't their area of it. Like, we've been talking about that possibility for 2 or 3 months now. How long have we been talking about that? Big East and basketball. And it's very clear that while we were talking about it, they were focused on something very different, right? They were focused on on putting together this Big 12 bid. So I don't know that I can predict what's next. I never would have predicted, as Justin Fuente pointed out today on the radio, I never would have predicted out that Stanford would have ended up in the ACC, so a lot of this stuff is unpredictable. I think one of the real positives is that in addition to, we know FedEx and Fred and the Smith family now have been supporters of Memphis. We believe that AutoZone has been a supporter of Memphis. One of the interesting things that emerged in all of this was it's very clear that the CEO of Lowe's, who was a Memphis graduate, Ellison is his name, someone at the university has connected with him, whether it's Bill Hardgrave or Ed Scott or whatever. And so it feels like, there's more, even a deeper bench of supporters have been able to put this together. And I know it's not, you can't just say, well, take all this money and pour it into the university without the Big 12. Like, what if they just took this, $200 million of of resources. And but that it's not a direct relationship. You can't just say, okay, we're going to put in all NIL money and kick ass. But I do think, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they do completely, you know, if they pay the full $20.5 million to their athletes that was reported in the Dellinger story, at least as part of this package, starting not this year, but next year, in which case you just keep kicking ass. That's all you can do is keep kicking ass.
Yep, 100%. The ACC thing, is that, I mean, it's not a thing, but the suggestion that they take this offer to the ACC, what do you think about that?
It doesn't seem like the ACC is interested in expanding at the moment, does it?
Not necessarily, but they did it when they weren't thinking about expanding with SMU. And SMU is a completely different thing. That's Dallas. That's an academic institution. We know the ACC is being on academics, so there's that.
I think the reason they focused on the Big 12 was they thought there was a better chance of the Big 12, you know, honestly, is why I think they focused on the Big 12. But sure, I'd happily join the ACC. But I think they don't think that it's practical at this point that the ACC would have interest.
All right. Now, Sam Hardiman for the Daily Memphian, he wrote up about the Grizzlies and the city and county's deal lease agreement with the Grizz will not be done this summer. So we're going to have to wait a little bit. Anything in there that's concerning as to in regards to Grizzlies not signing a lease agreement and leaving, right? Like, because that's everybody's worst fear.
Yeah, I guess my view of it is that I don't consider this to be a crisis. But is it worrisome? Of course it's worrisome. You know, until it's signed, it's worrisome. I mean, I've been the person who's been writing for 25 years when the Grizzlies were first coming here. Everyone said, oh, don't bring the Grizzlies here. Don't build FedEx Forum because they're just going to leave. And it was always ridiculous. They weren't leaving. It was a bogeyman. It was a scare tactic from people who had no faith in the city of Memphis, no faith in themselves, no faith in it was preposterous. And I've been writing that all along. Having said that, the lease is now up. And so it's no longer preposterous. The lease is up in 29. It is no longer preposterous to think that, you know what? Now you're getting to the point where it is a real concern. If Robert Pera had wanted to leave, there are lots of chances to him to have left all along. Like there was a shortfall in the lease several years ago, and it triggered a termination clause. And so Robert Pera could have said, oh, look at us. We're free now. We're going to get the hell out of here. And he didn't. They just rewrote the lease and stayed here. There has never been any sign that he is eager to get the Grizzlies out of Memphis. Having said that, they have the money, right? The $500 million has been identified. There is the money to go ahead and sign the lease, and the lease hasn't been negotiated to completion and then signed. And so, and speaking of moving the goalposts, it's unclear what the hell the goalposts are. The Grizzlies don't say what the goalposts are. And the story, if you read it by Sam Hardiman, the mayor says, well, they want a vibrant downtown. Well, if that's the goalpost, like how do you achieve that in the next 6 months? Right. We're like, what we want. It's like, I'll date you if you get a boob job. Like, I don't know. Like, what are you're, you know, and you get some work done, you know? And so I do think it's understandable that they want assurances that the neighborhood where they're operating is vibrant and safe. Just like if you were moving into an apartment, you'd want to know that the building was going to be, you know, you're moving in there for the next 20, 25 years, 30 years, whatever it is. You want to know that it's, you're not going to be, you know, in an apartment that's falling down and whatever else. But I don't know, and the Grizzlies haven't said, what it will take for them to actually sign the lease. Like, what's left? They have the money. So until it's signed, I think there is, yes, reason for concern. And I think you'd be naive to think there isn't reason for concern, particularly against the backdrop where the NBA has said, yeah, we're not necessarily going to expand right now. And yet we know there's a city in Seattle that needs a team. Yep. And so if they're not expanding and Seattle needs a team, well, there's New Orleans, That's a weaker franchise than Memphis. But they're owned by the Bensons, which is in New Orleans family, same family that owns the Saints. And so seems unlikely. So am I worried? Yes, I'm worried. Am I panicked? No, I'm not panicked. And I would have preferred it to have been signed this summer. That was what the mayor said originally. He expected it to be wrapped up this summer. And so now that it isn't wrapped up this summer, you know, that I don't think that makes people happy. Right. Today's story. But I don't think it's a five alarm fire kind of alarm. But I think it's a concerning. In the end, all of this comes down to, do we have a city that people want to be a part of, the future of Memphis, right? And that's true whether it's the Big 12, and it's true whether it's the Grizzlies. And so the task is to create a downtown and a city that is growing and is vibrant and whatever else. But I don't know how you accomplish that in the next 3 months in order to get the lease signed.
Yep. We'll see. But Jeff, I appreciate it. Thanks for joining.
Sure, good. See you.
Yes, sir. He is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X Daily Memphian Columnist, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
ESP. And now the Summer of 1,000 Engagement Sale at Robert Irwin Jewelers is almost over. This is your last chance. Don't wait. Save up to 40% off all diamond jewelry and engagement rings. With any purchase of $999 or more, get free diamond stud earrings. And with a purchase of $2,499 or more, get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. They're trying to take care of you, and they always take care of you because it's risk-free and easy. They have the meant-to-be guarantee that you need to take advantage of. Hopefully you don't have to take advantage of it. Hopefully you get the right ring the first time around. But if you buy your diamond engagement ring from Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it. No questions asked for a full refund. So they try to take the risk out of your decision-making with that. But I'll give you some examples of what you could take advantage of right now. Get a diamond tennis necklace for $14.99. You get a free pair of diamond stud earrings, or, you know, diamond engagement rings with oval, radiant, marquee-shaped diamonds. They're hot right now. You can get a 3 3/8 carat diamond engagement ring featuring a 3-carat oval in the center for $29.99, and you can get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. But make sure you get over, take advantage while you can of the Summer of 1,000 Engagements. And they'll always have a way to pay for any type of budget. You can propose now and pay later. Financing options, like you can take up to 60 months to pay. This is your last chance to save up to 40% off diamond jewelry during the Robert Irwin Jewelers Summer of 1,000 Engagement Sale. Hurry in. The sale does end soon. See a store for complete details. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations are online at rijewelers.com. Now, the NFL on ESPN has done their roster ranks. Mike Clay, Aaron Schatz, and Seth Walder have gone 1 through 32. I'll tell you what sticks out to me next. With NFL training camp starting up, NFL on ESPN gave out their roster rankings. 1 through 32, Mike Clay, Aaron Schatz, and Seth Walder do this every year, and this year was no exception. The top five as it stands right this second. It was at number one, the Baltimore Ravens. They took a leap over the Eagles from last year. Obviously, you have Lamar Jackson, that great offense. Derrick Henry is still in that backfield. But defensively, their secondary improved pretty dramatically this offseason. Not only Marlon Humphrey, Jaire Alexander, Kyle Hamilton, but they drafted Malachi Starks to pair with Kyle Hamilton, who is likely the best free safety in the entire league. Malachi Starks should be very good for them. Number two, you have the Philadelphia Eagles. Number three, the Detroit Lions. Very curious about what they look like, having lost offensive and defensive coordinator to head coaching gigs, and then a lot of the staff. They're going to have to remake that. But I still believe the Lions do deserve this type of nod. The Buffalo Bills at number four. Feels like Josh Allen and that offense and James Cook, they're doing a whole lot of heavy lifting there. And then number five, do you think this is too low? This was my first question. Kansas City Chiefs at number five. I'm just curious about that. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes, best, you know, unanimous pick for best quarterback in the NFL. But you're getting Rashee Rice back in all likelihood. We'll see what happens with his sort of off the field troubles and the you know, punishment he's getting from leaving the scene of an accident. Xavier Worthy back, Hollywood Brown back healthy. Still have Travis Kelce there. Offensive line could get better with Josh Simmons, who they took in the first round from Ohio State. Like, I look at this and I'm just curious other people's thoughts. To have them at number five after being a constant AFC championship team, constant Super Bowl team.
I think being in the top five for the Kansas City Chiefs makes sense. Them at number five might be a little bit low, but at the same time, I also feel like the storyline from last season with the Chiefs and the one that we've kind of been talking about this offseason is Patrick Mahomes can help take a roster that might not be Super Bowl and get them to the Super Bowl. So if that's kind of the conversation around the Chiefs, I don't mind them being at five as long as they're in the top five. I do think that the question marks around the wide receivers might be one of the reasons they are at number five. The teams ahead of them just feel like they have more things in place than the Kansas City Chiefs. I was going to ask you, like, the biggest weakness for the Kansas City Chiefs was listed as offensive tackle.
Taylor a 4-year, $80 million deal. That's a problem. It's not looking good at this particular moment, the return on investment from that. But he is still at least a solid right tackle as long as he's not jumping off sides and lining up off sides on a consistent basis. But that I get where they have that issue. And Josh Simmons, while I believe if he is rehabbed from his patellar tendon tear from Ohio State, that he could be one of the best tackles in that division, maybe in the league, he still is unproven. So I get where they come from with that. Their interior offensive line is more than taken care of with Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith right there.
But their tackles,
their edges are a little weak.
I feel like the conversation could be made, though, that they should be ahead of the Bills and maybe the Bills should be at five. Because I do feel like the same conversations that we have about the Chiefs, we have about the Bills, especially when it comes to the wide receiver position in Buffalo.
Yeah, and they have less in Buffalo right now.
Right, exactly.
They have less, but their offensive line is substantially better. It's substantially better than what the Chiefs
have. I mean, do you feel a certain way about them being at five?
Not necessarily. I was just I saw a lot of complaints about the Chiefs being at five, considering how dominant they are every year and how they just cannot be denied. But I think when we talk strictly roster, I think it's a fair ranking.
Yeah, because it's the entire roster. I think that the Chiefs just have a
few guys.
You
can't just sit here and say, well, Patrick Mahomes does otherworldly things. They need to be ranked higher.
That's one position, exactly. That's why, like, I bet that the team that some people might be pushing back against, if I had to guess, might be, like, the Lions where they are or the Ravens being at number one. And it's looking at the entire roster. We can have conversations about did they hit their ceiling as a team. But when you look at the roster, I think that that's why these teams are ranked where they are. And I think that the Bills and the Chiefs specifically just have a couple of question marks in a few key positions. And their quarterbacks are so damn good that they can overcome those question marks. But as long as they're in the top five, I don't really have any issue with it.
I want to start with my most overranked team, and that comes in at number nine, the Cincinnati Bengals. What they wrote up for ESPN, biggest strength, wide receiver with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, biggest weakness, they have secondary and offensive line as well. Here's my question about the Cincinnati Bengals. Is defensively, what the hell are you going to do to take a step in the right direction after last year? You were the worst defense in the entire league. You couldn't rush the passer even though you had the sacks leader. Your secondary was absolutely brutal. You have a lot of experience back there, but no good experience. No high-paid players. No all-pros. No Pro Bowlers. And you're stepping into a new era now with Al Golden as the defensive coordinator. What's that going to look like? How do you, after years and years and years of Lou Anarumo being, and who's now with the Colts as their defensive coordinator, he was lifted up as one of the best defensive coordinators in the league for what he did to get the Bengals to back-to-back AFC championships and win one. Al Golden steps in there now. How do we know that he's going to be actively better than Lou Anarumo was all these years? Does he have the talent to get through? And on top of that, when we talk about roster building and we talk about the roster in general, here's two guys they have listed that I don't know are going to play this year. Both of their edges, Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart. How can you reasonably rank them in the top 10 and not know if those guys are going to be out there? They're not a good pass rushing team with them necessarily. So if they're not on the field to start the year, how can you give them a roster rank that high? I know it's a first rounder and I know it's the sacks leader, but are they actually going to play for the Cincinnati Bengals? I'm betting no at this particular moment because it doesn't feel like there's a lot of headway made for either of their deals. But to rank them in the top 10 after the year they had last year, sure, their offense should be in that conversation. Defense has no business being anywhere close to the top 10.
Were you surprised to see the 49ers at 10?
They still have a good roster, still have some good names.
It's just all about health for them.
It's about health.
Yeah.
And age, and, you know, can George Kittle stay on the field? Brandon Ayuk, he was on the physically unable to perform list. Is he going to get back on the field? If they are all healthy, I think I could give them a top 10 nod. But last year is a good example of what can go wrong and how fast it can go wrong, only winning six games. The next two here are very interesting to me because there's so much up in the air. I'm going to go to 15 with the Chicago Bears. A lot of the Chicago Bears' thought process has to do with projection. If you think they're going to be good, you think Caleb Williams is going to step in and potentially be a top 12 to top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. If you don't think they're going to be good, you think that he's going to be around where he was last year and they're going to have the same exact issues. But when you look at their roster, they have made some very drastic improvements. Not only is their wide receiver room more complete than I think it was a year ago and younger, you basically trade out one guy for Luther Burden as your third wide receiver. Rome Odunze, DJ Moore, Luther Burden. You have a better tight end situation. Colston Loveland, they took him in the first round. You get to get more 12 personnel, two tight ends on the field. You can give some different looks with Ben Johnson now at the head coach position. Him and Cole Kmet, that's going to be interesting. I thought they did a really phenomenal job, which is why I'm surprised they're not higher than 15th, at rebuilding their offensive line. I do want to see a little bit better from the left tackle position. Braxton Jones just hasn't quite cut it, although he is still a young player. But Joe Tooney, perennial all-pro at left guard. Drew Dahlman comes in on a big free agent deal at the center position, and he was great with the Falcons the past few years. Jonah Jackson at right guard, who they traded with the Los Angeles Rams to go get him. He's been a pro bowler in his career. I feel like they've done a lot of good things to make sure that Caleb Williams can have more time in the pocket, operate on script a whole lot better, because we know Ben Johnson likes to do that. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Grady Jarrett, I know he's older, but he's been a phenomenal all-pro and Pro Bowl defensive tackle throughout his entire career with the Falcons. Montez Sweat still at edge. TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds, I think that's a good linebacking core. Their secondary, you add Kevin Byard on top of what is already a good one with Jalen Johnson, an all-pro, Kyler Gordon, Tyreek Stevenson, some young players in that cornerback room. I understand that so much hinges on the quarterback position. I do think their roster should have been rated a bit higher. But is there any team in the NFL that we look at right now that has a more, the polls of what they could be, when it comes to wins and losses? Like, I feel like they are a big wild card thrown into this season, considering the change they made at the top with Ben Johnson and what we feel like he could be as a head coach.
I mean, they're smack in the middle of the rankings, I think, for a reason. It's because they could go either way. You know, I don't disagree with anything that you just said. You just have to hope that, because it's still a really good position for a young quarterback to be in, and I think that Ben Johnson can certainly do a better job. And the pieces that they have around him, if everything starts clicking, the Bears could turn into something for real. We just have, it's just one of those things where, unfortunately, I think that the past history of a team causes us to have the conversation of, well, you have to wait and see. I'll believe it when I see it with the Chicago Bears, because, to be honest with you, we've just never really seen it on the offensive side of the ball. Very quickly, before we get out of here, I did want to ask, what was the most underrated team on this list for you when you look at it?
I personally think the Seahawks are up there.
That's the team that stood out to me.
I get that Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, like some people have some issues with that because Sam Darnold had one really good year of production with the Vikings. I think Sam Darnold fits what they want to do offensively a whole lot better than Geno Smith was ever going to. I think he can get into some of those play-action concepts, get under center a little bit more. They can run the ball as opposed to Geno Smith, who is a guy who really likes to drop back, be in the shotgun, and sling the ball around the yard. I like the addition of Cooper Kupp. I think they are the most underrated and probably top three secondaries in the league. They added Shaquille Griffin back, but Tariq Woolen and Devin Witherspoon on both sides of the field. That's really damn good. A first round pick from last year, and Reek Woolen, who's been an all pro just about every year of his career. I think they could really surprise some folks there. I think they are, without question, the lowest ranked team that should be lifted up in these rankings. I that's the one that stood out to me. The one that also kind of stands out to me, I know it's not 2020 or 2021, but the Steelers at 19. That's a lot of big names to sort of gloss over and just assume they're not going to be able to give you the production they've had throughout their career. Aaron Rodgers, that type of guy. You have T.J. Watt still, Cam Hayward, Jalen Ramsey, Darius Slay. Like, you have some big names that have been all pros before. You're sort of glossing over them because of age, I feel.
Well, that's why when you asked the question about, are the Bears the team that have the biggest swing, I thought, the Steelers might be that too. Because if Aaron Rodgers goes in there and everything is working, the Steelers could win a lot of football games.
If he can recreate a stat line from last year, that's going to be a winning football team.
Yeah.
Even in the AFC North.
But if he goes in there and pops his Achilles game one, well.
All bets are off. Yeah. Mason Rudolph, how you doing, brother? How you doing? All right, Small Talk is on the way. Make sure you stick around for that right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. We have some very unsurprising news out of the city of Houston today. Georgia 4-star safety commit Chase Calicut.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Has been arrested. Calicut, alongside friend Isaiah Phillip, has 2 charges against his name after a violent driving incident. There we go. Apparently, to Houston, let's see. Chase Zion Wade Calicut, 17, and Isaiah Bryce Phillip, 17, have each been charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Record show the teen drove around Calicut's car, tried to get away, but Calicut pulled up next to him again, court documents allege. Calicut was allegedly driving erratically in front of and alongside the teen, and the teen saw Phillip in Calicut's car with a handgun pointed toward him. The teen was able to make a U-turn and drive away from Calicut's car, but then he heard several gunshots, according to court documents. A friend driving behind the teen reported that he saw Phillip shooting out of the window as they drove away. So, Georgia safety commit, Chase Calicut, arrested on violent driving charges. At least we know he's a good fit for that program. At least
fits right in. Don't have to have a culture conversation with them.
It's a rite of passage. It's kind of what they do.
I've said it 1,000 times. Freshman at Georgia, not allowed to drive. Your sophomore year, you get a scooter, but not a motorized one.
Your junior year, they're going to be on a razor?
Yeah, you get a razor.
Yeah.
Your junior year, you get a bike. Your senior year, maybe you get a car.
Moped? I think we can go moped.
We gotta go.
You graduate to moped. Fifth year senior
has to get the only people that get a car.
If you redshirt by the time you're a fifth year senior, you can get a car, but you have to earn that.
Yeah. You on your feet though, your freshman year.
You know, I get it. I will say this: it is insane. But I will say, Chase Calicut seems to be a good fit at Georgia. Seems to be a good fit. Hour number 3 is on the way. We'll open it with Christian Fowler, Paranormal on a Tuesday.